you've got to understand value, right? And I don't care whether you're talking about an institution like the military, real estate, or Amazon, right? Everything in these businesses or business of success revolves around the value that they offer. Your ability to do well in short-term rentals is directly tied to the value you offer.
Hey, freedom fighters. Welcome to the Active Duty Passive Income Podcast, the only place where military members, veterans, and their families learn how to build wealth through real estate investing. I'm your host, Mike Foster, and I'm here to show you how to stop wasting your benefits. Now get off your ass, step up to the firing line, and make ready for today's lesson. Shooter, stand by.
Have you ever wondered why some people always seem to be more successful than others in life? Maybe they are more productive, happier, or even wealthier, or all of the above.
The truth is that most successful people take time to plot their course in life by setting specific, actionable, and attainable goals. But more importantly, they have an accountability system in place.
That's why Tim Kelly and I are so proud to announce the release of ADPI's 13-Week Action Journal.
We spent countless hours and poured our blood, sweat, and tears into this journal to ensure that you not only have a daily reminder of your 1,000-meter target, but you will be equipped with a system that will propel you towards your goals faster than you ever thought possible.
Click the link in this episode's show notes to take advantage of a special one-time offer just for our faithful podcast listeners today.
Look, bottom line, if you aren't willing to write down, track, and implement an accountability system for your goals, you don't deserve to achieve them. Click that link, get started today, and take advantage of this limited time offer now.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Welcome to the Active Duty Passive Income Podcast. We have yet again another incredible guest here, Alvin Cavalier, active duty military man, and also a investor. And we're going to get into all the weeds on short-term rentals, some great systems, and we have an incredible guest here to talk about it. Coach Cav, what's going on, brother?
Not much. Hey, Mike and Kevin. Thanks for having me on, guys. Great seeing you guys again and looking forward to today's chat.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it,
yeah,
too.
This if you're listening to this right now and you're like, you've thought about short-term rentals, maybe you stayed at an Airbnb or a home away or whatever. I mean, Cav, he is not just Airbnb. He does all of them. And he doesn't just do like, you know, the places where you stay overnight. He's got, you know, between the whole shared economy. So that's what the space is called. We're going to dig into it. But between, you know, sharing cars to private event space to overnight stays to managing other people's stuff and setting them up with the systems that they need. And ultimately, this is going to boil down to systems and setting it up right. And those systems have literally allowed Cav to be active duty Army, have a family with small children, being a great dad, and have 53 short-term rentals ranging from Olympia, Washington, all the way down to St. Pete, Florida. Woo. So they are everywhere and he's crushing it. And guess what? Lo and behold, he's not doing it alone. He has built an incredible system. And that's why he's Coach Cav. So Alvin, welcome to the show, man. And we are so excited to see you. But of course, let's kick it with your military background and how you got, like, what's your story? How did you get started in like short-term rentals?
Nice. Thanks. So ironically, it was a good friend of mine, a real estate investor and agent from New York City. She called me. We hadn't spoken in a while. She said, hey, I'm in New York City doing Airbnb and really doing well. What do you think about it? I said, hey, well, send me some numbers over. Let's take a look at everything and see where the numbers shake out. So she sent me a spreadsheet. The numbers look good. I did some light research and I was all in. So long story short, $17,000 later, I went into my first investment into New York City. Now, what's significant about that, at least for our military folks, is that I didn't use my own capital to go into this first investment. I pulled money from my TSP using a general loan, right? We took it out. I took it out at 2.75%, I think, interest rate on the $17,000 loan, and went into this first investment and turned it in literally 90 days.
Wow.
So that was the start. And then from there, just started burning down the East Coast within the next 12 months. Went from one property to about 12 or so in just under 12 months.
Nice, man.
Wow.
Wow. That is incredible.
There's a little known fact about the TSP that you can take a loan against your TSP and pay yourself back where, and maybe I might be speaking out of turn, Mike, you might know more about this one, but in most IRAs, you can't just take a loan. Like if you pull that capital out, you get taxed on it.
Correct.
You know, and this
yep.
CARES Act and stuff like that, where, you know, this is, you know, so, you know, you can't just pull it out and take a loan again. The TSP is kind of its own little thing. And the interest rates are like super low. So just
1.7%. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Like something crazy. So if you can go and pull that capital out, you've been contributing your TSP, your career in the military, you know, say you have 15 years, 10 years, whatever you have in the military, you probably have more than 17,000. If you're contributing some of your paycheck every month, like you should be, then you loan against that. And if you can put it in an investment that does better than 1% or 2%, or in Cav's case, 2.75%, I mean, that's bananas, man. Turning $17,000 in 90 days. Like, that's crazy. Love that.
That's awesome. That, but I mean, I think
that's one of the unique advantages.
Yeah. And I think that also attributes to something that I know we're going to get into, you know, later on, but it's systems, right? Having the right systems in place, because you can't just go and scale that quickly without having the right systems in place. So I'm super excited to get into that, but well done, brother. Well done.
Thanks.
Yeah. So let's kind of take it back. We kind of skipped over your military history. You're still active duty. And so your friend approaches you, and you get into this investment in New York City, and, you know, so you're in Airbnb. What attracted you to the short-term rental model? Because a lot of people out there, a lot of people in our community who might be listening to this right now, they're like, well, I don't want to run a freaking hotel. Like, I want a long-term buy and hold, long-term tenant that pays the month. Like, why do you think the shared economy is better than long-term rentals or any other strategy out there?
So if you were to ask me this question 2 years ago, I'd probably give you a different answer, because honestly, when I went into it, like most things we take a stab at some point in our life, I didn't know much about Airbnb or the sharing economy and the potential it offered. A lot of my experience obviously came over time, but at the time it was sort of a why not, right? The numbers look good. I trusted her and I trusted my own evaluation on what I was seeing and some of the potential growth within the short-term rental market, more specifically in the market, New York City. So I took a stab at it and it worked. And it only took me 90 days to get a return. And then that prompted me to go seek other investors, to bring them in to fund additional Airbnbs in New York, D.C., Savannah, and some of the early markets that we invested in.
That's awesome, man. And I love that, because, you know, you had the foresight there to say, okay, what markets? And actually, matter of fact, I want to ask, let's talk about this, because I feel like I already know, because you and I have had these conversations, but what was the factor that made you decide those particular markets from New York to DC to Savannah, right? Why did you choose those?
Well, obviously because I was in Savannah, but, you know, besides that.
Yeah, of course.
I'll throw this back on the table because I think it's important. if I'm answering this 2 years ago, I'm giving you a different answer because now the difference between me investing in a popular market like Houston or New York City, I look at it the same as investing in a small market like Enterprise, Alabama, or here in Columbus, Georgia. And first, those first investments were about the name and the location, right? Because we know that those popular metropolitan areas are tourist heavy. So the idea is that, hey, if we go into a popular market, we're automatically going to do well.
Right.
But what I've found over time is that your success in Airbnb is tied to the value you offer as a host. And my units in smaller markets such as Enterprise, Alabama, do relatively well, if not better, than some of my major markets like a Houston or Savannah, Georgia, right? So it's all tied to the value you offer. And if you understand how to assess market gaps and then where you can go in and offer value, then you won't shy away from any market because you'll go into the market offering value and offering something that it's not offered in the market. And then you ultimately set yourself up for success in that market.
Amen to that.
Yeah.
And if I can further, you know, on what you said there too, it's that same value that you set, you know, once again, you have some great systems in place, that value is going to attract people regardless of a pandemic. Right. Regardless of a crisis or a collapse, because I mean, there are plenty of people that did terrible in short term rentals, you know, during this whole global pandemic. I was not one of them. My property was
neither was I.
And neither was Kevin. Right? Neither was Alvin. So, I mean, yeah. There's something to be said there. Right. And it's not just, you know, going into this, you know, thing half cocked. You got to understand, what value are you bringing to the table? What niche do you fill? And what systems do you have behind, you know, help continue that success? So I'm so glad you mentioned that, brother. That was great.
Yeah. And let me go under the hood a little bit with respect to value and tied to the hip of value are traveler demographics, right? You've got to understand both. So if you go into Airbnb as a traveler, I'm giving you a look at the way we look at every market from a research and analysis standpoint to determine what value exists in the market. But if you go into Airbnb as a traveler, every traveler has a need. We can all agree to that. So the myth about ranking on the first page and having some type of SEO effect is simply just that. It's a myth because once a guest goes in and they hit a filter, for instance, if they're traveling with two pets and three kids, they're going to select pets. They're going to select a high chair, maybe a pack and play and kids toys. Right. So then it's never about where you stand in the beginning. It's about where you finish and having or understanding the filters that exist in Airbnb is key to understanding the market gap. And it's as simply as saying, I'm going to go into, let's say, Houston, and I'm going to select a one bedroom. And then the first thing I'm going to look at is the head to bed ratio. I'm going to look at how many one bedrooms in a market there are. And then I'm going to look at what's the max number of people they're sleeping from a head to bed standpoint. Then that's the first gap I'm looking to fill. So if 90% of the one bedrooms are only sleeping four people, I'm going to go on Amazon and buy two fold-up cots and throw them into the closet so I can sleep six people. That automatically then puts me into a two-bedroom. From a value standpoint, I'm competing with two bedrooms at a one-bedroom price from a head-to-bed standpoint. The very next thing we look at are kid-friendly amenities. Because they're filterable items and kids are real things, right? Believe it or not, people look at that. So we intently set up every Airbnb with the kids package, right? A high chair, a pack and play, kids educational posters, an ABC playmat, and toys. Because parents can go in and they can set a filter for those specific items. And all that means is that parents that are traveling with kids in any market, when they hit those filters, there are only a few homes that are remaining that meet their specific needs, right?
There you go.
So that, that's, that's just two examples of when I talk about assessing a market and understanding where you can add value. It simply boils down to you understanding, being able to go into the market, into Airbnb as a traveler, and then going through those filterable items. And then you can determine within minutes how many homes are in the market that offer these other amenities and what value are placed on those.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, okay. So let me just stop everyone right here. If you're listening to this podcast and you're driving, cool. Keep listening. I want you to keep listening. If you're listening at home, pull out a pen, get a notepad, listen to the last 4 minutes and write it all down. Like Mike, if you're watching on YouTube right now, Mike is holding up his notepad. I am like taking mental notes right now. I'm like, pack and play, pack and all this. No, because Alvin, like, he's my mentor in Airbnb. Mike's my mentor. Alvin's my mentor because they have done it successfully. When I set my first one up, I literally went to Cab and was called him, and we had this fenced in backyard, and we did the same exact thing that he did. The same thing. We said, hey, why don't we make this a dog friendly place? There's so many dogs in Alexandria, Virginia. It's super dog friendly, but has, you know, if you go and look and you go to a hotel and you're trying to like take your dog with, it's like really expensive. Yep. So, you know, we filled that niche. We put dog bowls everywhere and did this, you know, and we have like the poop bag dispenser thing, the whole thing. But we made the niche. We analyzed the market, filled the niche, and we've been super, super successful. Exactly. And I'm sure there's a lot of other things that Cav's going to drop on me right now that I'm going to have to go change everything and to make us better. But like, it's like forcing appreciation in a long-term rental.
Oh,
it's kind of like that because you're looking at it and you're saying like, okay, what can I do better? And just like Alvin, just like you said with the, oh, well, I just bought 2 cots on Amazon. What does a cot run you? I don't know. $100, maybe less.
Yeah.
Okay. So you forced by putting that in there, you're essentially forcing appreciation into your short-term rental because you're allowing more sleep and then you can charge more. It's really, really genius. And this is such an awesome episode. I'm so glad you're here.
Yeah. I mean, some really great ways to get creative and we can go creativity all day. Right. I mean, it's that fit in the niche, finding something, but really at the end of the day, you know, and this is something that I learned earlier on too, it's just giving a fuck, honestly, right? Like there are so many people in the market, in the short-term rental market that literally, they just don't care. You know, they'll put their home available. They'll say you have Wi-Fi and then there you go. Right. And like, and then you got folks.
That's
like,
your competition,
right? That's your competition. You know, you got folks like my neighbor and I, we were like, well, we're living on a beach. Like, let's rent some paddle boards. Let's rent some, you know, some kayaks, you know, like let's add some fun beach toys and stuff to it, you know? So like I'm renting my place. He's doing like a beach board and whatever, like type of rental. And so my guests are renting from him. They're renting from me. And it's just like this big little thing. And we become the icon on our little like, you know, ocean view area, you know, but it's just finding those little things to tweak and add value. So I love that, right? Pack and play, you know, when they're looking for specific things, who's left, right, in that filter, you want to be what's left in the filter. So find out as many amenities as you can put in there, dude. That's great. That's incredible.
Yeah. That's it. And I want to, I just want to like objections because when we talk about short-term rentals, the number one thing, at least that I think of when, if you're talking to an owner, Kev, what's the number one thing that they're like, why they don't want to do a short-term rental? I don't want to have anyone party and ruin everything. Mm. How do you talk to them? Like, how can you, if I'm someone who has a long-term rental right now and I'm thinking about converting it to a short-term, pitch me on your system.
So for homeowners that we engage, one, it's about professionalism, bring in a professional business into their home and not just, you know, a guy that's interested in putting his first Airbnb on Facebook, right? For all of his friends to come over and see. So one, it's a professional approach to what we're doing. There's a business behind the name. There are systems in place, whether it's our Vivint corporate security contract that brings in a smart home system that gives them complete access to it, to hiring local professionals to service the police, right? We give them the whole kit and caboodles to help them understand that what they're getting is a professional company that's serious about running a professional business to in their home. And on top of that, the crux of most of the lease agreements, I think, really becomes sort of the linchpin for homeowners, where in most cases you get typically a 12-month tenant. We go in with a master lease agreement off top, right? So a minimum of 3 years, max of 5 years, in some cases location dependent. I've done 7-year deals. But that, along with the professional company that's coming in to operate, references provided, we are giving homeowners a lot to chew on and think about. So 7 years, potentially 5 to 7 years of stability, rent on the first of every mm-hmm. month, regardless of if there's COVID or not, you're getting paid for that specified period of time. Mm-hmm. And some of the financials, at least at this point, that are back in the company with the number of rentals and being able to show the year-to-year profits and growth in the company really helps at this point now take on more investments and reduce the risk for homeowners.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, just the stability you can. I mean, I think, like, if someone's trying to transition their home, and can we dig deeper into the systems? What systems do you have in place to, like, you know, what happens if someone throws a massive party and, like, breaks all your stuff? Like, what if I don't know. I mean, we all have stories. I mean, we can literally talk about all the stories of terrible things that have happened to our Airbnbs. But the point is that I'm trying to make is that, like, if you build the systems, you can mitigate most of those before they even happen. And, like, what can you tell, Alvin, what can you tell, like, someone who's getting into short-term rentals, that, like, what's, like, the number, you know, your top three systems that you need to put in place to prevent these, like, I think there's literally a show on Netflix called, like, like, Airbnb Nightmare or something. It's like, I've watched a couple episodes. You'd find it comical.
Yeah.
What are some of these systems, though?
I think first and foremost, you need a good security system. Because what we've done in some cases with our Vivint system, we have wireless alarms that are not tied to the security system, and then you have the security system with outdoor and both doorbell cams, right? So that allows you to monitor the traffic that's coming in and out of a home. I do not have the noise sensors. And it's not that they don't work or they're not valuable. I just don't see the need if I see who's coming in and out of the home consistently from a traffic standpoint. Then I'm able to adjudicate, assess, and then adjudicate what's going on and the nature of what's happening at the property. So that just becomes an additional expense that I don't necessarily need to tie into the business. But the second thing, and it's going off of Airbnb, right? And this gets a little bit into the sharing economy discussion and why we do allow events on Airbnb. And it's because we push, right, those that want to have events to a platform called PeerSpace. And PeerSpace is the Airbnb of events. It's a platform that's dedicated to hosting events. The beauty of PeerSpace is everything you'll see in any Facebook group any day of the week that has a concern about what should I do about someone that wants to host an event or do this that's pertaining to an event. PeerSpace, the platform, is built to take on to host events. So all of your mitigations are built into the platform. So if you take someone that wants to host a baby shower and you're concerned that it may turn into something else, we simply take those people and we push them to PeerSpace. And the benefit of that is now we monetize them by the hour, versus having them stay an entire night.
That's interesting. Wow.
Right.
So, and they're renting the same property. They're renting it on Pure Space. You just have another listing.
Yes, absolutely. And it's by the hour again. So now we're boxing them into the 4 or 6 hour time period at a much larger rate, albeit somewhere between $150 to $200 or so per hour, plus cleaning fees,
wow,
all the other associated fees.
Stop.
Wow. Mike's just like, all right, I'm out of here.
We are going to talk about that. We are going to talk more about this.
He's just hanging up his headphones. He's out.
Hey guys, Kevin here. And I wanted to take a quick break from the show to fill you in on what's happening behind the scenes at Active Duty Passive Income. Most of you already know that ADPI is not just a podcast. We're a community of real estate and passive income warriors taking action, building wealth, and giving back together. That's why I'm so proud to announce the creation of ADPI's Financial Services Division. With a full range of tailored lending options, our team of pros is ready to provide active duty service members, veterans, and military families just like you all the advice and resources you need to close on your first or next investment opportunity. Click the link in this episode's show notes or simply text DEAL to 33777 to get connected today. Now, let's get back to the show.
I like to tell the story of the very first one did in Somerville, South Carolina, which is about 25 miles north of Charleston. So on a bright Saturday, right, we had an iGas company out of Charleston booked the home 4 hours from 8 to 12 for an offsite company meeting. They paid $250 an hour for 4 hours plus catering from my personal chef. And that same day, I had an Airbnb guest checking in at 4 o'clock. Right. That was for 4 days. So that broadens the discussion, you know, as we talk a little bit about operating in the sharing economy. And then a big picture, it gets us outside of the conversation about occupancy rates for in a particular month and pushes us more into the conversation about our profit margins for that particular time frame.
Yeah. And I think the number one, like another big objection that people hold who are trying to get into Airbnb, you know, besides the systems, like who is cleaning these places and how do you find these people?
Yeah. And housekeepers, let's just face it, they become your property managers, right? And mm-hmm. you've got to have good quality people. But I think there are two key components of it. One, you've got to hire people that do this for a living and not just as a side hustle. And two, you've got to bring them on as a member of the team and not just a housekeeper that's servicing the property. And what we found successful from a hiring standpoint, we use Thumbtack. And the reason why I like mm-hmm. Thumbtack is because they've got to pay for leads even if it doesn't get to landing them a job, right? So you get a more dedicated group of professionals that are on Thumbtack because they can lose hundreds of dollars before they land a gig, which is important to me. And then the second key part of that is what you put into the detailed description for them to read up front becomes key to the quality of housekeepers you get back that respond back to your jobs. So we've got about a 20 question questionnaire that goes into the add additional things you want these people mm-hmm. or this person to know. And then from those 20 questions really gets us back to people that respond that really want to take on the job. And knock on wood, luckily enough, in each market, we've been able to hire a good quality professional teams to operate our properties. And again, back to the first point, they become property managers without that being part of their job title. So they take on tasks from arriving to, hey, assess the grass, look for cigarette butts outside, you know, check the door, screws, shoot like a jump master, right? When you're coming mm-hmm. into the door, just go through the house before you pick up a rag, right? We need to know the condition of the exterior and the interior of the home. So then they can contact the vendors on the vendor list to take care of those issues while they're on site. And that becomes part of the process for housekeepers that they're tied to, that we hire. They've got to agree to those standards to take on all those additional tasks for that. And not to mention, before I leave it out, redundancy is key, right? Because real life happens to people. So you've got to have redundancy built in your housekeeping system. So in some cases, depending on the location, it's always two, but in some locations we have three teams that we keep on board.
That's critical, man. And even with redundancy too, you know, sometimes you have to figure out how you're going to implement, like, say, for instance, those three individuals, right? You know, how do you implement who does a job when? Because it's not like you can shift favoritism to one team and then just keep two teams in the background and think that on the one time that you need them, 2 months from the time you hire them, they're going to be available. Mm-hmm. Like, no, they're going to blow you off. You haven't given them any business. So how do you incorporate that into a system? Do you have it on a rotational basis?
Yep. So there's a primary and everybody knows, and then everybody else gets at least one clean in a month. So they stay pretty active on the property.
Right.
Yeah. So that's the way to do it.
Yeah. That's huge, man. I love that.
And the best part about this, guys, if you're listening, so you're paying these housekeepers, right? And you're going to go in and, you know, first of all, you're putting this responsibility on them to be the property manager. They want to be on your team because when they're on your team, they get more business, you know? So it's mutually beneficial for both parties, right? But then, you know, you're paying them whatever, you're paying them $60 to clean the place. Great. That's $60 for the housekeeper. They're happy. Guess what? For you, you're charging your guest who stayed there $75 to clean the house. You can cash flow off of the cleaning fees, and it's not like you're, you know, it's like, ooh, $15, I guess, but every bit helps, and that helps pay for, you know, materials, or that helps pay for soaps or whatever. Like, it's all just goes into it. And I mean, just really mastering the shared economy like you have so beautifully and so quickly is just astounding to me. And I want to be you, Alvin. So I don't know. There's no question there.
I don't have a question. Oh,
Lord. you bring up a great point about cleaning fees. And part of this discussion for our housekeepers, right, gets into the sharing economy, because some of these properties have personal chef services, the peer space events. So we really brought in a discussion for housekeepers. And on the surface, we're telling them they're going to get more work than just what they're doing for Airbnb, because each of these other services come with a cleaning fee. So what that allows us to do by saying, hey, we have four different services that are operating from this home that are all generating cleaning fees, then we get to negotiate, right, that rate for the Airbnb cleaning fee, because there's so many other jobs that are coming along with it. And back to your point, Kevin, about capitalizing on the cleaning fee. In some cases, we have about $120 difference between what's paid to the housekeeper versus what's coming in from the guest. So that's a great point for folks to understand.
Yep.
Yeah. That's unbelievable, man. Yeah, there's so much in this, and man, we could talk for like hours. I'm trying to think of like what's like the best, like most impactful question that we could get Alvin to talk about right now with short terms, because there's so much.
Well, I kind of want to go back to this whole security thing, man, because here I am. He's got cameras monitoring the outside, all this. And so I don't think we mentioned this. You're managing 53 properties, right? 53 properties,
yeah.
Most of which you own, which is incredible. And we'll get to that in a second. But for the security, like, what do you do with these cameras? You just have those all on a screen? Like, you have this bat cave? And just,
he's got this bat cave. Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking of.
Right. Like, are you watching these cameras? Did you hire someone to, like, watch and just monitor and then taking shifts and stuff? Like,
It almost appears, but yes. Yeah, so they're a team of assistants that monitor the cameras, and then others that are taking on the messaging and the real world issues that happen at each of these properties. Now, I do have the Vivint smart home app on my phone where I can scroll through and take a look at each property. But, you know, something else important to note. So Vivint system is set up for a traditional homeowner, right, and not mm-hmm. for a short-term rental client. So I've been working with them over the past year on how to really integrate and properly manage something unique as short-term rentals, where you may have an issue or encounter an issue, but you don't have the homeowner there on site to stand right. in front of the panel and take care right. of the issue. So they've come a long way over the past year working with my properties to better understand the short-term rental market and turn their products into something more friendly for people like us, right? But yeah, so virtual assistants and co-hosts help with those tasks.
That's incredible.
And how many virtual assistants do you have working for you, Alvin? Just curious.
There's a team of 5 virtual assistants.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And they're doing everything from messaging the guests to handling problems to, so if a guest comes in and says, oh my God, the sink's leaking or something, like what would happen in one of your properties? Like, just walk me through how this would go down.
Yep. So virtual assistants and then our co-hosts, right? Two levels. So the virtual assistants are responsible for mostly the day-to-day communications, making sure check instructions go out, and check-in instructions. The co-host handle real world problems, right? So if the sink's leaking or the internet's out and we need to contact a company or get a service out to assess the situation or service the property, the co-host then take on that task. So it goes from virtual assistant being the first point of contact and then the co-host for any real world issues. And then me or one of my partners, we just take updates as things go. But 9 times out of 10, some things happen, get service, get paid for without me even knowing about it.
And the co-host, is the co-host the cleaning person in a lot of these places?
No. So they're just either an experienced Airbnb host or just someone that we picked up along the way and trained them in the co-host role to...
In that market, though, so they're like kind of your middle managers, like regional managers. Like if you have 5 in Enterprise, Alabama, you have like this. You know, wow, that's really cool.
Right.
That's it, man.
There he is, the king of building systems.
See that? I mean, guys, this is what it comes down to.
That's beautiful.
You know, it's finding success, finding what you know is working, turning it into a system, and repeating it to scale. And that's dude, that's incredible, man.
Yeah. Okay. Real quickly, Alvin, real quickly, because we are running short on time. We're going to have to have you on again.
Yeah.
Whatever. Right now, real quickly. Taxes. Talk to me about the tax benefits from short-term rentals.
So it's one of my favorite things to talk about. I always put a disclaimer out that I am not a certified tax professional yet. Currently studying.
Yeah. No, very, very cool. You're studying? Awesome.
Short-term rentals, the taxes in short-term rentals are one of the reasons why this went from 1-2 to 53, right? And short-term rentals are taxed differently. And the story I like to tell is that due to the nature of short-term rentals, meaning you can have a guest that comes in and says, hey, Mike, Kevin, you guys didn't leave ESP in the magazine. You had Netflix. You didn't have Hulu and you didn't have fried green tomatoes. Right. So they arbitrarily can leave you a 1-star review. That 1-star review impacts your ability to make money. So mm-hmm. with a subjective system, comes right the ability to add value to your places, and that value you add all goes into the loss column, right, from a tax standpoint. So you can pile on the goods, right, with respect to short-term rentals and more specifically the year of, meaning the year that I open an Airbnb, I'm going to take on a significant amount of losses. And what we do, what we've come to understand is that if you average out your expenses for an Airbnb that you open the year of, all your administrative costs, your furnishings, everything that goes into opening it up, you're going to spend somewhere between 35 to potentially 50 grand, right? So that's important to understand. And then we go back to understanding the principles, right? Are the costs necessary? Or they, what's the two principles here? I'll come back to it. But understanding the two principles of taxes, ordinary and necessary in order to make a profit. There we go. But these costs in this case become necessary in order to make a profit, right? So all those costs go into the loss column. So now what you come to understand from a tax standpoint is that, hey, if I open an Airbnb this year, I'm going to take on at a minimum a $35,000, $40,000 loss against that property. So from a loss to gain standpoint, then I just know I need to, or my magic number is essentially where that threshold is, where it's 40 grand. So mm-hmm. I will likely, unless it's New York City, not make $40,000 in income from that one property that year. So what that means is on paper, I'm operating at a loss. So you multiply that times 2, 3, 4 properties in 1 year, and now you're taking on a significant loss. And then in some cases, you get to a point to where I am. Now we look at it me and my wife, both with W-2 jobs, those losses that are filed on Schedule C offset our taxable W-2 income to a point over the last 2 years where our adjusted gross income has been well below $40,000 combined, right? So that becomes pretty significant.
Outstanding.
And when you start to talk to investors about their profit margins, they have to understand the tax conversation, because some investors, especially if they are in traditional real estate, they want to look at monthly numbers, right? I want you to look at yearly numbers, because there's some backside tax benefits that increase your profit mm-hmm. margins over the course of that year right. that are not necessarily reflected month to month. So that becomes an important discussion to have with investors to understand before they get into the short-term rental business.
Yes. And guys, this is before depreciation on a property. So if you own the property and you're operating an Airbnb, what we're talking about is effectively the tax loss from operations, right? Like as if you had a long-term, rental, it would be like, if you, you know, put in renovations to the property, blah, blah, blah. Like this is before just general depreciation based on the current schedule. So there is a ton of potential out there.
There's a ton.
I mean, it's bananas.
And I'll just add to that too, right? So take the home you live in, right? If you are a short-term rental host and you live in a property, 9 times out of 10, it has more than one bedroom, right? And you guys can probably see where I'm going here. So mm-hmm. you have an opportunity to list your own personal home as a short-term rental. And then now you get to take on expenses, right, that may otherwise be personal expenses to furnish your home or upgrade in some cases things in your home for the business. Right. So you bring in a whole nother aspect of taxes to your home and things that you would otherwise do from your personal pocketbook into the business. So short-term rentals, in my opinion, from a tax standpoint, has tremendous upside if you understand and you're able to leverage all those different aspects of it.
That is incredible, man. You just made me think about a whole bunch of things that I can probably write off right now. So I'm about to go back into my taxes. make sure I go.
Quick, call Brandon Cox.
Every little bit. Yeah, call Brandon right after this, man. This is going to be great. We're going to have an awesome conversation. Oh, dude. Oh, man. So incredible, man. So incredible. I mean, we haven't even gone into like cost segregation
we
and
haven't.
Appreciating all the
things
that you that you can claim, right? With the 53 properties that you have. I mean, man, you shouldn't be paying taxes for the next like few decades.
I won't publicly claim that, but to that point, right? It's also important to understand where you spend money, right? Because I have this thing that I call deal breakers, right? So to me, let's just take a coffee pot or coffee. Some people will be bent over crazy about having a Keurig, right? Versus a regular 12 cup coffee pot. And let's just say the difference between the two, it's $120 because Keurigs can get pretty expensive, but we know you can get a 12 cup coffee pot from Walmart for a few bucks.
Right.
The difference here is providing coffee won't get you a 1-star review, right? Because you've provided the amenity to guests.
Technically, so, you can make coffee. Yeah.
my point to investors is always, listen, let's think about this from a tax standpoint and think about the items that we are going to purchase that have a depreciable value over time, right? So upgrade your furniture and downgrade your coffee pot, right? So that's value from a tax standpoint that gets you into a different way of thinking about how you spend your dollars on this.
Love that.
I love that, dude.
It's awesome.
Boom. That's gonna be the quote for the episode. yes.
Upgrade your coffee pot. That's it.
There you go. Hey, okay, Alvin, we really got to kick this into the bonus round. So, you've been tremendous value and legit. I'm going to have to call you like after this and probably talk to you for like, I don't know, till like midnight or something. I'm sure you're free. So that's fine. all right, Mike, let's do this.
All right, brother.
You'll have to fight with my kids.
Yeah, there we go. Wonder who's going to win that. Question number one. What is your favorite book?
Favorite book, I'll pull it up for you because I keep it here desk side, but don't let it be a surprise, right? Tax Strategy for the Savvy Real Estate Investor.
Nice.
It's not specific to short-term rentals, but based on our last conversation, you can understand why.
Yeah.
That book is a gold mine.
There you go.
For real estate investor.
Go get it, man. I'm talking about.
Heck yeah. There's going to be a link to that book in our show notes. So if you're interested in that book, scroll down to the show notes, click on the link and get your copy. All right, Alvin, pushing forward into our next question. Who is your biggest hero and why?
I would have to say my late brother. I lost him back in 2014, but we were genuinely linked at the hip and alike. In most things we did from a competitive standpoint, he was in the Army. I joined in the Army after him. And a lot of things we did throughout life were very, competitive in nature. And he passed away, unfortunately, due to ALS in 2014. So a lot of what I do now going forward is all with him in mind. So he's my hero at heart day to day.
Amen, brother.
It's beautiful, man.
I'm sorry to hear about your loss, dude. But all right. Question number three. What do you like to do for fun?
Kids. I've got a almost a basketball squad. So they occupy a lot of time between them, their activities. And on the other side, reading. I tend to do a lot of reading and listening to Blinks or podcast first thing in the morning when I get up.
All right.
Eric. Yep. Miracle morning, man. That's it. And final question for you, Cav. If you've shared so much in this episode, and for those listening, rewind it, listen to it again. It's a podcast. You can listen as many times as you want. Cav, if you had three nuggets for someone who's listened to this episode and it's like, holy crap, I have a perfect short-term rental opportunity. Like, I want to get started in this, but I have no idea. Like, what would those first three nuggets be for that person?
So the first thing I'll tell you is you've got to understand value, right? And I don't care whether you're talking about an institution like the military, real estate, or Amazon, right? Everything in these businesses or business success revolves around the value that they offer. Your ability to do well in short-term rentals is directly tied to the value you offer. The second thing you've got to understand is that you've got to assume that there's going to be 3 to 5 short-term rentals opening up in your market every 2 to 3 months. So that ties back to the value you offer and understanding one of the first points, assessing market gaps and allowing you to position yourself in a market to compete well with the value you offer. And the third thing, it really becomes the first thing, but it's understand taxes, right? Find a CPA, talk to them about your short-term goals, your long-term goals, help them understand or let them help you understand where your short-term rentals will fit in to the larger picture, and then start there. Understanding taxes, the tax benefits, and how they will impact your business long-term.
Awesome.
By the time we launch this podcast, Alvin will probably be a probably
CPA.
A CPA. So yeah.
Heck yeah, dude. A CPA soldier, Airbnb master, Coach Cav in the house. Where can people, and real quick, because we have like literally starting another one of these, where can folks get in touch with you, man?
So just hop over to the website, www.yourspacestr.com. You'll find the online course and a number of the services that are offered through Fiverr, as well as links to hop on a free 15-minute consultation to talk about whatever's on your mind.
Right? Awesome. Love it.
There it is.
All right.
Reach out to Cav, y'all. He's awesome. He's crushing it.
Yes, he is. And he's also a member of the community, so you can also reach out to him through the Facebook group, right?
Yeah, great. Absolutely.
So looking forward to you again, brother. We got to run, but thank you so much again for bringing so much value to the show, and wish you best of luck out there.
All right. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
All right. We'll see you, dude.
Outstanding. That was an awesome episode. Thanks so much to our special guest, and thanks to you for listening. If you haven't hit the subscribe button yet, make sure you go and do that. Or schedule a call with us by texting ADPI to 444-999 or checking out our website at www.activedutypassiveincome.com to find out how you can get started on your financial freedom journey today. I'll see you guys next week.